It's the ERP Confab. I'm David Essex, Editor-at-Large at Search ERP, with my colleagues Brian McKenna, Business Applications Editor at Computer Weekly, and Patrick Thibodeau, news writer at Search HR Software. Oracle announced a slew of upgrades to its Cloud ERP, Human Capital, and Supply Chain Management suites during its virtual Open World conference. We'll talk about those introductions, what they might mean for Oracle users, and for Oracle itself as it competes with SAP and other rivals to build enterprise applications that are more autonomous and user-friendly. So the announcement on September 29th that Steve Miranda, the Executive VP of Oracle Applications and Product Development, led was mostly focused on their Oracle Cloud or Fusion Cloud ERP and enterprise performance management, but they also had some supply chain-related announcements. Brian, you wrote a piece about these introductions and also interviewed Steve Miranda. What's your take on what some of the highlights were?
Yeah, I interviewed Steve Miranda ahead of the keynote session. So my story, if you link to it, David, for listeners, will be a story that was written before the full panoply of the keynote. In particular, I think my story was a bit light in detail in terms of what Tim Regan was saying from Dropbox, the CFO there. In terms of what Miranda was trying to put across, very similar to last year, he has customers with him to try and kind of validate the story, which is basically that if you are doing something big and strategically changing your business model, or you've got a completely new entity going, new business going, the Oracle Cloud Application Suite is the way to go. That he was saying, well, I mean, a lot of our customers have been getting by fine or using their traditional on-premise applications, but they reach a point where the business environment is so stressful that they have to change. And so that's typically when he said Oracle customers tend to go all in on the cloud application suite. And of course, the COVID-19 pandemic crisis has been a big catalyst, one would think. And in fact, he said a few things about the impact of the crisis on Oracle customers, which I talk a little bit about in my story as well. I suppose the big thing to flag in that respect is supply chain. He said a lot of their customers are rethinking their supply chains as a consequence of the crisis. And in terms of new stuff, that was very much on the kind of artificial intelligence side of things, introducing a more conversational UI for supply chain logistics managers. That was kind of a purely kind of technical update thing. I mean, the real thing that he said to me in the course of the conversation, once he got past the kind of sales spiel, was that a lot of their customers have been working their supply chain technology really hard during the crisis. So it's not been new stuff or new products. It's more them working the supply chain aspects of the suite harder.
Since it's software as a service based, you know, that it's inherently, in theory, helps with integration, with global integration of different partners. The press release made a somewhat general reference to integrating more levels of the supply chain. I think they mean different levels, like there's top-level suppliers, there's, you know, manufacturers, distributors, there's, I forget the exact term they use, but there's like the original raw materials supplier, and then there's the sub-assembly suppliers. So that I guess they've added some features to help further integrate that, but I didn't really see any details on that. And also there's this logistics digital assistant, which they call the conversational user interface, to get real-time logistics information such as shipment tracking. So it seemed like in general, the announcements on the September 29th were more of the same of what we've been seeing the last couple of years, where Oracle has been adding chatbots, the conversational interface, which I think you can type in, and there's natural language processing, but also you can speak to, you can talk to it, to command it. And then automating using like robotics process automation to automate more pieces, little business processes that are nonetheless important, such as account reconciliation, which you need to do for the financial close, and some seemingly mundane things that are nonetheless designed to speed up the tedium and take the tedium out of people's hands, such as using machine language to match an invoice code to a purchase order, which is the kind of thing that often gets kind of mishandled in companies, and people have to kind of go searching for that. So useful stuff. Some of it was a bit incremental, but it seems like they're continuing to build out this more automated and kind of user-friendly, partially robotized, these business applications that are meant to, in theory, help the user more.
And I suppose on the just on the technical front, the other area that he spoke about a lot was customer experience.
So it's a new area we call CX Unity, and it's probably most closely associated with what the industry calls a CDP, or customer data platform. However, you know, we believe we've got while it does some of the features that CDPs generally are thought of doing, you know, single place for your customer and all the activities that happen around the customer, the significant differentiator we have is two parts. One is because we also run transactional systems, sales, service, marketing, and ERP, it has a direct integration. So it's not like you can feed it from third parties, but any customer who calls in for a service request or who opens an email from a marketing campaign or who gets called on by a sales rep or who clicks on your website and navigates through or clicks on your e-commerce site. So, you know, since we have those transactions, they're integrated directly. And then in addition, the big part of the CDP is not just to record, but actually to use machine learning and push out appropriate actions. So in other words, if you were a customer of ours and you took a call from the sales rep and then you clicked on our website, then you went to an e-commerce spot and you put something in your shopping cart, but maybe walked away, you know, that not only would have the recording that you did that, but then have the next best action. So we may want to call you to see if you had trouble, we may want to send you an email to remind you, et cetera. And again, because we have those transactional systems as well as the CX Unity, it gives us the ability to have that full end-to-end.
Kind of top line significance of that for him was, he said, you know, we've got the full suite. So that's our advantage. You know, we can integrate directly into transactions. Implication being that maybe Salesforce can't do that, or some of the competitors can't do. But then again, SAP would make a very similar argument about kind of linking up the back office to the front office all the way through.
It seems to be what the two of them are trying to do, and Infor is doing it with their Cloud Suite platform, and they have their Coleman AI, and a number of the ERP vendors, the major ones anyway, are seemingly trying to embed this artificial intelligence, so-called, and less intelligent, you know, process automation, the two of them together. Pat, there was also an announcement, I believe, on the same day about the cloud HCM products and some interesting things going on with payroll and with employee experience. Which do you think were the most important announcements to come out of that?
Yeah, I'm just going to talk about the productivity issue first, since that came up. I mean, a lot of what they did with the HCM was productivity this, you know, improvements in the finance, right? Okay, great, Oracle. That's wonderful. You've been saying that. They do four releases a year, and they say it every single release, productivity improvements. Can you quantify this for me? Mm-hmm. What are the actual business value gains? No, we can't. And they always default into the thing that, well, this allows other employees to move on the higher value work. And that may be true in some instances, right? But it also means they can show the employee the door. What is more likely happening, at least in the case of HR, is it's allowing allowing users basically to increase the percentage or the ratio of HR worker to employees. So they can grow in size as a company, but keep their HR and finance staffs relatively stable without adding too many people. But they don't talk about that because, you know, it's not a nice thing to talk about. But it's also very user specific. And the problem is a lot of their users, they get these releases, great, wonderful, but the new releases just sit there waiting to be turned on. And it takes a while.
Pat, you and I both talked to Rondi Ng, who's the Senior Vice President of Oracle Applications Development and was the one quoted in the press release on the Cloud HCM announcements. And you tried to get at this issue a little bit with him, as I recall, this issue of how it affects the rank and file workers. What was your take on his response?
Well, it was inconclusive. You know, the only thing he will say and the only thing he can say is that it boils down to what the companies, you know, how effective they are in turning these systems are and making use of them. I think there's some frustration here on the part of Oracle, is they can, you know, lead the horse to water, and that doesn't necessarily mean that the users are going to invest the time and the effort to put these, you know, to do the change management, to get everybody up to speed on these new functions, and then also put them into the workflow. I don't think that necessarily happens right away on the day of the launch. I think it can take many months, even in some cases years, for users to get comfortable with these upgrades.
Yeah, it's not a small thing to change. Like, the, you know, they talk about the employee journey, which is something I talked to Chris Leon about a couple months ago for a feature I wrote. And, you know, it sounds pretty good. And I'm saying that sincerely. I'm not saying it cynically, that the idea of like the onboarding and how you try to be aware of what the experience is as a candidate before they onboard, and the onboarding, and how to sort of hold people's hand and get them integrated into the company and all that. But it really is a big change in how companies do things and how employees do things. And I totally agree that there's a lot of change management, I would say training, because as we know, these things that sound highly autonomous and kind of gee-whizzy often don't work quite as smoothly as they appear to be in demos when you actually try to use them. This might be kind of an unfair question or hard to answer question, but what do you think these announcements of the past couple of weeks in the big cloud application suite, what's in it for customers, or what are some of the challenges that they might face? First of all, like, what is the benefit? What would you say is the benefit to these recent introductions and what Oracle has been doing with this more supposedly autonomous type of ERP?
Well, I guess what Oracle would say is agility, speed, especially in the context of the crisis that we're seeing all over the world. That if you don't make these changes quickly, you could just go out of business. You know, a lot of companies are not going to make it.
Yeah.
So I suppose that would be an Oracle kind of point of view, how helpful that is. Sure. There's something that Pat said just now, which really kind of reminded me of something that Evan Goldberg, the CEO of NetSuite, said. And when we talk about Oracle and cloud applications, then we always have to remember NetSuite, because that's the complement to what Oracle's offering through Fusion. And what one of the things that Evan said, which might be partly an answer to your question, David, is that he said a lot of their customers, and this was in the press Q&A on the eve of their user conference, which was this week, he said the number one thing that customers say to him, and this is him talking obviously, is they realize there's a lot in NetSuite, but they just don't have the time to get to any of the goodness, because they're just trying to get through the day. And that's especially true of kind of small to medium companies, he would say. But the pandemic has opened up some time. So just as we've been clearing out our cupboards and, you know, getting to those tasks that we wouldn't normally get to because of lockdown, that a lot of their customers have been doing similar stuff. So it might mean that for Oracle customers too, on a different level. But then even saying that is kind of a category error, because NetSuite is Oracle.
So he was saying that he was making a bit of a comparison, Brian, was he, to between the NetSuite platform and what Oracle is doing, because there does seem to be some overlap, especially in the mid-range.
That's a different line of conversation, I suppose. No, what I was saying there was that their customers were getting to some of the jobs that they weren't getting to before, just because of the conditions of the pandemic or whatever. But yeah, the whole NetSuite Oracle interrelationship is an interesting one. Mm-hmm. And I know, Pat, you've written about this as well, how NetSuite is consuming more and more Oracle stuff. So on the kind of AI, you know, UI and user interface side of things, but also in terms of the Oracle Cloud Infrastructure. So Goldberg said that by 2021, all new NetSuite customers will be on OCI. They have some customers on that already, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, what do you both think about this, how this looks from a customer point of view? Because the lines seem to be blurred between where Oracle stops and NetSuite begins?
Well, I have a kind of a radical view on this. I think that, you know, NetSuite is more focused on the lower end of the market. That's where its appeal was. And I think the lower end of the market is about to go kaboom. One company in particular, Rippling, is just now over $1 billion valuation. This company is aggressively focused on a very simple concept. Just create one employee of record and then integrate everything you can into that employee of record to cut down the amount of administrative work that HR has to do. And they are just gobbling up mind share, grabbing investment and getting customers left and right. I think they're a clear threat to Workday, give them 4 or 5 years. And I think they're a threat to somebody like NetSuite, which may get too bogged down in Oracle's processes and Oracle's way of doing things and may lose the initial appeal that made it very popular. So I don't think that necessarily going upstream with Oracle is going to be the best outcome for NetSuite. It might be the best outcome for Oracle, but I think the lower end of the market is about to see some radical changes.
Yeah. I must confess, I have not had a chance to talk to any customers, and I've certainly never been on any Oracle sales calls, but I imagine those must be pretty interesting. And maybe, I don't know how well integrated the teams are, but how do they position, and what is the price difference? How do they position Oracle ERP Cloud, Fusion ERP Cloud, and HCM versus the others? I don't quite see how they manage to differentiate. And I think it's a fair assumption that a lot of NetSuite's business is from existing business. I mean, you know, they were really the first SaaS ERP product over 2 decades ago. So a lot of what they're doing is probably serving who they already have. They do advertise pretty heavily, though. I hear them on Sirius XM radio and satellite radio, and they do seem to be appealing more to someone who's going for their first ERP system, maybe is coming from QuickBooks or something.
Yeah, well, that's always Evan Goldberg's sales pitches. He'll say that typically their ideal customer is someone who's maturing beyond QuickBooks or Sage. I'm sure Sage might have one or two things to say about that, but that's usually the way that he puts it. I've only interviewed Evan Goldberg once, and as I said, I sat in on this this session earlier this week. But I always get a little bit confused when he gets asked about, well, do you take care of the small to mid market? And he'll very quickly say, but actually, some of our customers are enormous. I think, okay, well, shouldn't they be Oracle customers then?
It goes the other way from the Oracle product line. They will talk about, they seem to be trying to have it both ways or be all things to all people too. I think it's generally acknowledged they're mid-sized to large is maybe more their sweet spot or who they're really going after the most, but they don't say, oh, we won't sell to small business. If you want that, you have to go to NetSuite. I don't get the feeling it's so well coordinated.
And I suppose for full disclosure, we should say that our own company runs on NetSuite.
It does, yes. And so far, things seem to be coming along smoothly. The three of us are not NetSuite users, however, to our knowledge. more like Microsoft Office. But
David, I wanted to ask you about something that Goldberg said in relation to NetSuite and Oracle interface, which was the Redwood design. He said that they were massive fans of the Redwood design approach. And I don't really know anything about that, but I know that you've looked into
I did a piece on this. They talked to some depth about the introduction of Redwood, the 2019 Open World that we were at. It's basically a UI thing, like what SAP had done with Fiori, I think, perhaps in a less integrated way. So part of it is it's an integrated marketing thing too, though. It's not just about the look and feel of all the Oracle applications. It's primarily that, but it's also the look you see when you go to the Oracle website. They're tying it all in. They're trying to have an image with all these earth tones and somewhat abstract looking shapes and things. They really have, you know, really tried to change their image and their marketing materials, but also bringing it into their cloud applications. The conversational user interface and some of the other UI emerging technologies are part of Redwood also. And so is Goldberg saying that they're interested in taking that? I haven't looked at NetSuite's.
Oh, big time. Yeah. You know, he was kind of playing that up. I mean, we could just say that's just all marketing anyway. But
Did he indicate that they want to get the Redwood UI and they haven't done it yet for NetSuite?
Yeah, it's in my piece.
Well, we will be sure to provide a link to your piece. One little aside before we perhaps talk about the broader competitive picture. When Pat and I were talking to Rhonda Ng, I asked about the apparent dropping of the name Oracle Adaptive Intelligent Applications, which is really all we were hearing about for 2 or 3 years prior to this. And here's what his answer was.
Let me tell you actually the evolution here. Like clearly a couple of years ago, we talked about adaptive intelligent apps, and there was actually a separate team of people creating a lot of different use cases and so on. Now, that team still exists, but like their nature of their work is focusing on creating the common platform, as well as kind of basically the self-adaptive learning models behind the scene to support the different pillar teams. Like for example, the financials teams or kind of the supply chain teams, or kind of the human capital teams to build their intelligent use cases on top of that platform. So we're not actually calling those things out as like kind of AI apps anymore, selling them as separate AI apps. We're actually just embedding these AI capabilities everywhere in the core processes.
A bit of a shift there in how Oracle has been embedding and, you know, deploying its AI technology, at least the name they give to it. So I'm wondering what the two of you think of where this leaves, either from the recent announcements or just in general. It does seem as if the ERP world, especially at the larger vendors, the top 3 or 4 or 5, are all trying to make things, in theory, more autonomous and just more automated for the end user, applying machine learning process automation to more business processes. Any sense of who's ahead, if we can say that someone is ahead or behind here?
Well, my first thought on this is both Infor and Epicor, you know, the two buzzing rivals to some of these big vendors, both got, one was sold. And the other, both were basically sold. One got a huge private equity investment. Analysts said in both cases, they argued that these private equity firms are going to pump money into these companies to improve their ability to do R&D. So if the analysts are right, then we should be seeing some really great innovations along those lines. Automation, robotics, machine learning, within the next couple of years from both Epicor and Infor. So I definitely think there are definitely some interesting times ahead there. In terms of SAP and Oracle, these are the Goliaths. I mean, they're the Goliaths of the market. They have a depth and richness to their R&D that is unrivaled in the ERP space right now. And these two firms will stay neck and neck as close as they can to automating everything they possibly can.
So the other is because it's so R&D intensive, anyone further down the chain, and I guess we need to include Microsoft in there, you know, good size company, but I think they put a bit less into the ERP platform. There's no way an Epicor or an Infor could stay competitive without a big influx of capital if this is where ERP is going.
Yeah, that's a good observation. I mean, it's probably at that point where the outside investor is saying it's either put the money up now or forget about it.
So the thought I would reach for, David, is an interview I did with Mike Etling, who's the CEO of Unit 4, about a year ago now, and he's ex-SAP. One of the things that he said about all this AI and ML stuff being embedded in enterprise applications is you shouldn't call it something and you can't charge for it. So he was drifting towards saying this is just going to be, to use an American term, table stakes. It's kind of what he meant. It was, you know, it's not going to be a point of differentiation among these vendors. They're all doing much the same kind of stuff.
I think I heard Darren Roos say something similar when I talked to him and when they had their conference in Boston a year or two ago.
Darren Roos, the CEO of IFS.
That the idea that it's got to be embedded, it's just got to be part of it. And, you know, they say that about a lot of technologies, that they disappear eventually into, or they go underground, I guess.
I mean, to be fair to Oracle, I know you mentioned that shift, David, and I'm sure there is a shift there, but it strikes me it must be quite a small one because Oracle has never gone down the path of calling their embedded AI Einstein or Leonardo or
yes, good point,
Coleman or any of the other fancy names that the other vendors have used for their AI stuff. So
good point. They didn't try to brand it in that way, although it sounds like they sort of have organized their development in a similar way to the other companies, because there's always that problem. What's the practical application? You have the sort of theoretical AI, and then you have to find ways to get it to work in things as important and yet kind of mundane as matching invoice numbers to purchase orders. We've been through a few of these virtual conferences now, and Pat and I had the experience of attending SuccessFactors Success Connect, which I've already forgotten when that was, Pat. It was either yesterday or the day before.
It was that memorable.
It was. And it seems as if the companies had done this with varying degrees of success. And I think we have Unit 4 going on this week. I believe I'm maybe today, Unit 4's conference.
I think that's next week.
Oh, it's next week. Okay, so I haven't missed it. Yeah. That's good. And we've had SAP Sapphire with the infamous webcast crash at the beginning of Christian Klein's keynote. But certainly it seems like the companies are using these to create infomercials, even if they are having keynotes that are live. And it seemed with Oracle, and I think maybe with SuccessFactors, it looked like maybe the senior people were live, but it was hard to tell whether it was really a recording and they were just broadcasting it live. So I don't know, what do you two think about the, now that we've all done a few of these, what's been your take on how well the companies have adopted to having to go virtual with their conferences?
I think the kindest thing to say is it's suboptimal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just not the same. I mean, I'm just saying a very bland thing there, but it really isn't the same as being kind of on the ground and engaged and so on. We've discussed this on our own podcast over at Computer Weekly as well, just the actual experience of it. You don't get that total immersion for a week. You're hopping in and out. And it's just not the same.
And Oracle, you talk about popping in and out. Oracle, if you look for the Larry Ellison speech, they refer back to something about, the autonomous database that he gave in July. And we had a virtual ACM.
I wanted to ask you two guys about that. Have you heard anything about the Ellison keynote? Is he giving a keynote?
Apparently not. I did ask Oracle PR about this, and they didn't have a keynote to mention. And then if you go to the Oracle speakers page, it's the page where they talk about the speaker series, I think, on the homepage. If you find Larry Ellison, it's a link to something that was done in July. And so talk about stretching things out, and this thing's coming in November. And it certainly removes the sense of immediacy, especially when you then go and look at them and you find that it's very canned. It's not live. There have been some executive Q&As that were live, but essentially I think mostly for the press and analyst community. And those can be kind of interesting and obviously off the cuff. Pat, how have you, as a news writer, both you and Brian do a lot of news coverage of these virtual conferences. How has it been different for you?
I agree with Brian. Can't get on a plane fast enough back to these conferences. But I think the vendors are struggling with them as well. I covered an Infor conference that was just the other week. And the person was asking questions of the users on a panel. Actually, just let them talk. Let them talk about their experience of running the business and some of the problems they were encountering. And the stories, natural stories, began to emerge. And it was actually informative. And they ran a couple sessions like that where they didn't get heavy into the marketing or the product. They just wanted to talk about the business challenges. And there was another conference that I tuned in, which I won't name. And it was nothing but product, and the users just seemed to be giving canned pitches and canned statements, the same kind of dribble you read in the case studies. So it was just awful. And I think you have to think that the audience is going to recognize where the value is. Mm-hmm. And the users are going to, the vendors are going to have to respond to that.
I have felt, and I said this back a couple months ago, in connection with SAP Sapphire. I felt that SAP did a good job of trying to have a pretty rich agenda of topics and panels, and Oracle has sort of done that too. So it must have been a huge challenge. As you say, the vendors are struggling with this. They have the resources to put into it, but they also seem to have taken it as a different kind of opportunity once they realized they didn't have to prepare and have almost everything ready for 3 or 4 days to present in person. It seems to have sort of blended into this gray area of just generalized marketing and video presentations and things that could go up at any time. And as I commented to Brian in the last podcast, I think, it seems like it's changed the product release cycle. They already, you know, the SaaS vendors already did have the quarterly cycle, but the news that has been announced at the start of these conferences, if you could even determine the official start of the conference, hasn't been quite what it has been in the in-person conferences. That's my feeling anyway. Brian, we're down to our last minute or two. Any final thoughts?
Not really, just to kind of echo what you're both saying about the nature of the experience of these conferences. I suppose that what it might do is, for us, is just shift ourselves away from covering conferences, which might not be a bad thing. Right. We can just get on with doing some kind of normal journalism.
It might be the kind of business that has really radically changed after COVID-19. It's something that maybe will never be the same again, because I think people, just like with remote work, maybe people are realizing they don't necessarily need to do things the old way. They've proved that there are other ways of collaborating and doing business. Well, that's it for today. Thanks for listening. And thank you, Pat. And thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Thank you.